The beer is cold and the wings are hot. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
All right, let's put a bow on Texans week and look ahead to Monday night as the Bills travel to the Meadowlands, take on a Jets team that all of a sudden has a little bit of the unknown factor, and with Ulbrich now taking over for departing Robert Saleh, we welcome in Matt Perino, covering the team for the Syracuse Post-Standard, syracuse.com. Matt, I mean, I'm sure it's scorched earth at this point. You know, the Bills lose and questionable, you know, clock management at the end. You know, just give us a synopsis of what McDermott said yesterday as everybody was kind of peppering him. What did we learn about the way that game unfolded in Houston?
You know, I think that what I took out of it was that it's a regime right now, a coaching staff right now that is running into its first bit of adversity, right? Like we really were complimentary of Sean McDermott and the shift to these two young, bright young coordinators that are going to be calling plays on both sides of the ball. But I think with like anything else, what should be anticipated is, you know, challenges along the way and learning opportunities the wrong way as you go up against some good offenses, some good defenses, and that's what we've seen the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, what I took from Sean yesterday was they're going to go back to the drawing board and they're going to figure out the best way, especially offensively. Because I think if you take the defensive bounce back this week against Houston, Nico Collins leaving the game definitely had a part in it. But I thought that the way the defense played in the second half was inspired. I mean, this is a group down Ed Oliver, Von Miller, Taylor Rapp, you know, Matt Milano, Taron Johnson, I mean, you name them, they're out of there. I don't even think Terrell Bernard was probably playing at 100%, but he makes a game-changing play there late in the fourth quarter. Whenever you're able to force two fourth-quarter turnovers against a top-tier offense like the Houston Texans, I mean, you're doing your job on that side of the ball. I still don't kind of quite understand what Bobby Babich was doing with the safeties deep. He tried to explain it to us yesterday and basically, you know, that they had three timeouts. They could probably do anything, maybe some play action and then attack down the field. Although with 7 seconds left, I just don't know why they would do that. So I think just learning opportunities is the big thing. And I know that there's a level of frustration within the fan base with Sean. And a lot of this goes back to, you know, some moments over the course of his eight seasons, the way seasons have ended, some of the really memorable losses where just absolutely bungled things down the stretch. And this was an example of it. And I don't know how much this was, you know, he's not going to put it all on Joe Brady. It feels like, you know, Joe Brady maybe being a little bit aggressive there and trying to lean into maybe even what Josh wants to do. And then you get into this whole other side conversation about, all right, Ken Dorsey was kind of handpicked by Josh and Brady came in and he got along with Josh and they elevated him. And how much does maybe Josh need a little bit of, I don't want to say tough love, but maybe somebody to say, no, we're doing this definitively. And how much can Sean interject into that? How much does he interject in it? There was one viral video going around about him on the sideline. It looked like he was saying, like, we got to run the ball or something to that effect.
We got to get a first down, basically. Yeah.
They got to get a first down.
Yeah.
So I think they have to take a long, hard look at what they're doing, which isn't working. You're featuring a guy in Mac Hollins who, all due respect to Mac, is a career journeyman. The guy that you prioritized in free agency has been an absolute invisible part of this offense and the highest cap hit of any pass catcher on the team or any weapon on the team. Dawson Knox has 5 targets and 3 catches.
Yeah, I was just going to go there with Knox, Matt, because okay, some of these new guys, they haven't worked, as we know. Curtis Samuel, negative yardage in that game. Mac Hollins. But, and you asked Sean this yesterday, what is happening with Dawson Knox? Are we perhaps watching a player who his skills are already beginning to diminish?
Yeah, I don't believe that. You know, I don't believe that. And I think part of it is you have to – Dawson Knox has never been a guy that's gotten a ton of loads of separation, right? Like, he really ate in this offense. I felt like at times when they had a bunch of guys that were separators, like the Cole Beasleys, the Diggs of the world, and how do you cover everybody? And I think he kind of, you know, was a benefactor of Brian Daboll and his scheme and the way that, you know, he dialed up some things and got some people in spots that they were open. I was watching that game the other night, whether it was the Chiefs, whether it was the Baltimore Ravens, And it's amazing how much, first of all, protection is a big part of it. And I don't think the offensive line has played great the last 2 weeks after a really good start. If that finds a way to improve this week, I think that helps you out if you're Josh Allen to be able to survey a little bit and wait for some windows to open. But I think Dawson Knox has to get the ball in his hands across the field, sideline to sideline. Let him get downfield and use that physicality. Those are some of the highlight reel plays of his career when he can kind of catch the ball on a crosser, get to the sideline, and then barrel over somebody and win one of those Kyle Brandt scepters, right? Well, we haven't seen that in years. And so I think it's now, you're Sean McDermott, you're like, all right, we're paying this guy. He's like got all of this synergy with Josh Allen. They're best friends off the field. On the field, it looks like they're distant relatives. And that can't be the case just because, you invested everything really in the pivot to this two tight end, 12 personnel, and it's sometimes three tight end kind of look, and they don't know what to do when they're in it, or it's not effective when they're in it. So I think it comes down to Brady. I feel like the pressure is kind of on him to figure out some answers after a really hot start. How do you turn this around? Because I don't even think Dalton Kincaid, outside of that one game, I think it was Jacksonville with the touchdown, has looked like the guy that I think they need him to be.
Yeah, it's funny, Matt. I mean, it's been said a million times, the NFL will figure you out pretty quickly, and it sure feels like defensive coordinators have figured out how to slow down the Bills' offense here, at least from the last 2 weeks. What was kind of a horizontal passing game has gone a little bit more vertical here over the course of the last two games. We see Josh Allen throwing it more downfield and receivers who are struggling with separation. So I guess it's a long way of asking, should the Bills be in a market? We hear the rumors about Davante Adams, but should they be in the market for a wide receiver? Is there somebody out there that can help this team and help this receiving core get more separation and make life a little easier for Josh Allen?
Yes. Like, I think whatever, the one thing I wonder, and, I asked Sean also about Mac Hollins yesterday, and I think it's like 17 targets in the five games, and he's got six catches. And his first response was, Mac Hollins is a good football player. And I should have followed up, but I had another question to ask. And in that Zoom setting, you really only get two or three to get in, and it's hard to follow up. So what I would have liked to have sent back was, I'm not disputing the fact that he's a good football player. I just think that you need a really, really good wide receiver to be in that role that you're featuring. Now, the other thing about Sunday that we kind of glossed over on the podcast, Khalil Shakir means everything to this offense at this point. He's their best playmaker. Him and James Cook, I think, are 1A and 1B, that if you're without one of those two players in a game, you're really up against it. And that's my biggest argument for going out and trying to acquire somebody. I'm not in the Davante Adams camp for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think there's some gymnastics that you still have to get through, even if you're able to get the Raiders to pick up a hefty part of that tab, and who knows if they even will. I think the Amari Cooper trade is really interesting. I just had Antoine Staley from the New York Daily News, does a great job, covers the draft really well, tape guy, like really breaks these guys down. And he was talking about Cooper last year. I think I saw a stat on Cooper where 40%, 45% of the targets that he's had have been uncatchable balls this season in Cleveland. So just think, if he were to come into a situation with Josh Allen where he's going to be able to, have a real chance to make plays on passes to him, if we'll see more of the stat line that we saw last year, because everybody was talking about the resurgence of Amari Cooper last year, the year before that. And Antoine said, he's a great route runner. He thinks he'll be exactly what the Bills don't have in their arsenal right now. And that's the kind of guy I think about. Another kind of Hail Mary option, if Carolina loses again this week and things are really starting to tank and they want to add more draft capital, I know a lot of people would probably say, okay, Adam Thielen, no. I think he's a little bit too old, and I don't even know his injury situation. Deontay Johnson, I think, would be a really interesting one. He's got some speed. He's a good route runner. I think adding him as a 2-3 option that gets Mac Hollins off the field and let him maybe focus a little bit more on special teams. I know the Bills really want good blockers. They want that Gabe Davis role wide receiver in their repertoire. But I think at times, matchup specific, sometimes you don't need that as much as you need somebody that can get open and Josh Allen can throw them the ball. And I just don't know if Mac Hollins can be trusted in the passing game. everybody, you know, pushed back on me watching live. When you're in that bird's eye view, sometimes you see a play and you tweet about it, you react. I was like, man, Mac Hollins just dropped a perfect pass from Josh Allen. I watched it back. It wasn't a perfect pass, right? But it was beyond catchable. That's a play, if you're an NFL caliber wide receiver getting 17 targets in five games, you better believe you better catch that ball and then go score with it. And I just don't think Mac Hollins is the guy for the role they're asking him to play.
We're talking to Matt Perino, Shout Podcast, Syracuse Post-Standard. I'm glad you brought up Shakir. And Matt, I would make the argument in a season that has been littered with injuries between Milano and Bernard and Taron Johnson, and I would say Shakir's injury, as far as what's behind him or what that is, the most glaring here. So what are the chances they get him back? Because an ankle injury, we all know a high ankle is different than just your run-of-the-mill sprained ankle. Do we have any kind of context of what he's dealing with right now?
No, we don't. And it's going to be a day-by-day situation. So obviously keep it locked as we get into the locker room. Hopefully, if we get a chance to see him walking around, maybe we can catch up with him, get some a progress report. We'll probably get a decent little update on him tomorrow. If he's limited in practice tomorrow, I think that's a really good sign. It's definitely not an indicator that he's going to play, but they're going to need him against the Jets because, you know, if you have nobody that could separate on the outside, they really can key in on this run game. And the Jets aren't good against the run, but if they know you're going to run, it makes it a lot easier to defend, as we saw a couple weeks ago in Baltimore, which I thought that they actually run the ball pretty well the last couple of weeks. It's just they haven't done it enough, and the pass game hasn't been effective enough. And whenever your quarterback is completing 9 of 30 in a game, it's amazing, isn't it? Like the way that the narrative shifts year to year. We're sitting here after 5 weeks. The Bills are 3-2. And if I would have told you with this schedule at the beginning of the year, the Bills start 3-2, and Josh Allen doesn't throw an interception in the first five games, what are you saying back to me?
No,
wow.
Take it,
right? Yeah. Because of the teams that they're playing. And I think sometimes we overreact so much in the moment. I thought Joe Brady, you know, had an interesting press conference yesterday. I thought some of his answers were perplexing, and some of them were on the money. And I think one of them was, listen, if we were sitting here and we won the last three, but we lost the first two, if we feel different, it's such a like roller coaster league where you ride it every single week. If they beat the Jets this week and they go to 4-2 with, I think it's Tennessee coming up next.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole new world. So they can get things right. I think the defense is getting healthier, but you're right. They need Khalil back. I think Deion Dawkins wasn't 100% in that game. That's a problem that we'll have to track that hamstring. It's always about health though, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. And Matt, when you look at the rest of the AFC East, and as we're talking to you, the Patriots made it official. Drake May is going to get the start over Jacoby Brissett week 6. So you look at the rest
of the division,
and you see what's going on today with the Jets and moving on from Saleh. I don't know where you come down on that, if that's a good or a bad thing for the Buffalo Bills. I just think the Jets are the Jets, and they're dysfunctional, and they remain dysfunctional. And changing the head coach probably when changing the head coach the week that you have a chance to get a share of first place feels like the wrong decision, but we'll see how that plays out on Monday. I guess the point here is that for as rough as it may have been here through 5 weeks for the Bills in these last 2 weeks specifically, man, the rest of the division is crazy bad.
Crazy bad. Like, I'm shocked at where, you know, Miami was even before the Tua injury. And, you know, I think that the decision to fire Saleh, to me, is 6 months too late. Like, I don't know how you go through last season. And with the way that, you know, all these little things with Saleh, the way that he handles himself publicly, like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff in Hard Knocks, like, he seems like a great dude. Like, I'm not judging him on that. I think I'd love to have a beer with him. You know, he seems like a nice guy. He doesn't seem like an NFL-caliber head coach that's going to lead a team to the playoffs and to a Super Bowl and all those kinds of things. It's just moment after moment, he just kind of puts his foot in his mouth, and the interactions between him and Aaron Rodgers, that thing on the sideline, you know, I could have predicted all of this when we talked in the summer. Like, I just never was on board with the Jets, partly because I think Aaron Rodgers is partly cooked, but I also think there isn't leadership in that building. There hasn't been since Saleh's been there. I mean, there never really has been, right? But I don't know what this does. I know a lot of people believe in the 1 week, you know, coaching change juice that you get. I think Aaron Rodgers is banged up. I don't think that their run game is what people expected it to be. I think that offensive line is as bad as I thought it was going to be. And this is a Bills defense that's getting healthier. If they get Taron Johnson back this week, I think they're in a really good spot against this offense that's struggling, that's begging to turn the ball over. They had three interceptions the other game. I thought he could have had two more in that game too. So this is a team defensively that's still going to be a challenge. They're always a challenge, and I think that's the part of it that I'm most interested in. Can Josh Allen take that second matchup last year where he had a little success against this defense, a defense he typically doesn't play well against, and make that continue that momentum into this matchup? It's interesting. I'll also be interested in how much Albrecht, with this being all on his plate, how he handles everything this week in New York, like taking over as head coach, having to call the defense at the same time, likely. It's a lot on his plate.
Yeah, last one for me, Matt, and it's something that the Bills experienced, you experienced. The Jets did not opt to take their bye week coming back from London. How much do you think that factors in? Because we saw the Bills kind of come out lollygagging last year against the Giants. How did that all affect you coming back from London last year?
It's a lot. It's a lot on your body. And we didn't even have to play a football game, right? It's a lot, and it's a lot going on there. Like, dealing with all of these questions this week while preparing for the game. Like, Aaron Rodgers is going to go on the Pat McAfee show tomorrow, and that's going to be an absolute media circus. And, the reporters are going to be in the locker room this week chasing every detail they can about this. And I was talking to Staley, like I mentioned, and he said after the game, Quincy Williams brought up that there had to be some accountability. So this is something that maybe the team has been waiting for. Like, maybe there hasn't been a belief in a leadership, and this is a change. But now the other stuff coming out about Saleh considering firing Nate Hackett, and maybe this was a move by the organization to appease Aaron Rodgers and not have that happen.
It's crazy.
When you're a player coach, I just don't know how that's going to work. This isn't the Bad News Bears, right? Or what's that one movie with Burt Reynolds? It's a football movie.
The Longest Yard.
Oh, yep.
The Longest Yard, right? Yeah. It worked in that movie, I guess, but I don't know if it's going to work for A-Rod.
I just think to myself, man, this is all setting up for the Jets to do what they always do, which feels like they tear it down to try and build it back up. And when you have a GM who's on an expiring contract, I don't think Joe Douglas has necessarily done a bad job. I mean, he whiffed on quarterback, and he's whiffing on quarterback again with Rodgers here and going in on Rodgers. But I honestly don't think that he or Saleh were really ever in control of what this team wants to do, that it really all started at the top, where dysfunction usually starts with the ownership. And with that in mind, this is going to be a long struggle of a season for them before they eventually move on from everybody, including their quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a team that, you have the owner publicly coming out and basically, begging Hassan Reddick to come back to the facility. The way that they've bungled that whole thing.
Oh, my God.
There's
another
a report
one, yeah.
on just... What's that?
Another one. I forgot it. Yes, that's... I mean, like, it's just a dysfunctional organization top to bottom, and it keeps exposing itself.
Right. And, I don't know if we have time for this whole conversation, but like the Sean McDermott dynamic within the Bills fan base is so interesting to me. I've spent probably 20 minutes this morning, like texting back and forth with family members who are like, Robert Saleh got fired. When are the Bills going to fire Sean McDermott? And it's like, it feels like such a, like a reach, but there is great discontent for a portion of the fan base with Sean. And listen, a lot of that falls on him from Sunday's loss. I mean, the way the end of that game played out, he's got to wear it. And to his credit, he did. I thought he wore it even a little bit more so than he did with the whole 13-second debacle when he just didn't want to talk about any of it. But if you look at his regular season winning percentage and you look at the 20 years before he got here and the fact that he's been in the playoffs 6 of 7 years, he's on track probably this year to win the division again, and who knows. I get wanting the next big thing, but I guarantee you, I shouldn't say guarantee, but I would wager a lot if I was a betting man that the next coach that Terry Pegula hires to be the head coach of the Buffalo Bills probably won't be as good as Sean McDermott. And I know that's a scary thought and idea, but look at his track record. Look what's happening with the Sabres right now. How many coaches have they been on? And I'm not saying that there's not probably a good option out there, but how many great head coaches are there in the NFL right now? Three? Four? Like, I mean, Super Bowl caliber winning coaches. You know who gets about as much love as any NFL coach going? Kyle Shanahan. He's gone to the Super Bowl twice. He's lost both times. He literally has the same exact resume as Sean McDermott. I know he's gotten to the Super Bowl in terms of winning big games. He loses big games, right? He's 2-3 right now. Where's the outcry from 49ers fans to get him fired? I'm not saying Sean McDermott is not without any criticism. I think he should be criticized. I think that it's always worth having this conversation, and I think depending on how this season goes, the conversation is going to intensify. But as for right now, I just don't see a better option, and I also don't think Bill Belichick is this somehow Hail Mary that you could try to pull off, bring him in, and then at 70 years old that he's going to dial all this thing up and get it going, and it's going to be all great. Look at his record without Tom Brady. I don't know. This is we probably have to have a whole segment on
Matt, we'll table that the next week. The 30 seconds here, for folks who don't know, Matt's cousin, Andy Parrino, former Major League Baseball player, former San Diego Padre. Baseball playoff, Matt, are you for the Padres? Are you for the Yankees? Are you for the Mets? Are you for someone else?
I am for the Padres, the Mets, and the Yankees. And I want the Yankees to get to the World Series, preferably against the Mets. And then I feel like it will be a win-win because my daughter likes the Mets. My son likes the Yankees. So I know that's not really great. I know New Yorkers will probably push back on that. But I like both teams. I feel like you can like a little bit of both teams if you're not actually from New York City.
No, rooting for a Subway Series I think is totally fine. I'd root for a Subway Series.
Not according to Michael Kay. Michael Kay wants the Mets dead and buried, and shame on you if you're pulling for something that actually might help the city there. Matt, what do you and Ryan have working? I know the podcast is coming up tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, we'll have one tomorrow. Like I mentioned, I just finished up with Antoine's Daily, first look at Bill's Jets. That's up now. We'll have the preview show later in the week. We'll have you covered on everything that's going on at the stadium this week.
Thanks for making time for us, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
Matt Parrino, covering the Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard. You can read his work at Syracuse.com. And don't forget about the Shot podcast, available wherever you pod.
I can answer his question, see if you agree on this. Like, why is this? Well, part of it is, all right, the Bills haven't gotten where they should have gotten. Most Bills fans would believe that. We see the numbers here when it comes to your engagement. When the Bills win convincingly over Jacksonville, it's not as good as when you have a loss. Losing means more engagement. So the noise comes from the losing, not from the winning.
Engagement, I mean, if you're going to just put it in terms of numbers and algorithms, I mean, the algorithm loves anger and hatred and divisive takes. I mean, that's the world that we live in now, right? In online culture and social media, all the algorithms are kind of skewed towards the outrageous. The outrageous is what wins the day. And with Sean McDermott, to Matt's point, when you look at what he's done versus what it was before he got here, it's a no-brainer. Like, who are you getting that's going to be better than him? I don't know that you are. The thing that's frustrating, and this is what frustrated me last year that caused me to go off the handle, it was the way they lost that game to Denver. I'll always remember the way they lost the game to Denver, the way they lost the game to Kansas City, it's just the way they lose the game. It's not the loss as much as it's the way. We're more outraged by the way they lost in Houston than we were to them getting their asses kicked on national TV in Baltimore. And it's the way that they lose that it really gets under people's skin.
What gets under, just for me personally, is you lose the 13-second game. And then when you're asked about it, you blame execution.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't 13 seconds. It's a regular season game. But at least it's showing me, even though maybe there were other people at fault, see Josh, see the coordinator, Sean McDermott accepted the blame. I'm like, okay.
Progress.
He's making progress.
Progress. Well, so he's more graceful in a loss than he was after 13 seconds. Maybe that's an experience that he learned from. But I think that's the outrage. It's not necessarily you lose the game. Nobody's going undefeated. You're going to lose games. It's how you lose the game. It's not getting your asses beat and embarrassed in Baltimore on national TV that gets you upset as much as it's mismanagement of things that when we're watching, we're like, how could you even think that that's a good idea? How could you not run the ball once, just yeah. once, to get them to burn some timeouts? What do we, you know, and you know it because you see him say, we just need a first down. He knows it. So where's the breakdown in communication? Where does it fall? And ultimately, as he said, it falls on him.
Yes.
It falls on him.
So he learned.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back next hour. We're stocked next hour. Matt Leone, new Rochester Americans head coach, stopping by the sports bar. He'll be in studio at 425. Are you going to bring up the Leo shuffle with him?
Yeah.
We are going to talk about that with him. Yeah. We're going to see if he understands, you know, the idea that Gene didn't know that the name of the Boz Scaggs hit wasn't Leo Shuffle. It was Lido Shuffle.
Well, I wanted to play Leo because that's his Mike Leone's nickname, Leo Shuffle. And mm-hmm. That was pretty bad. But you believe he doesn't even know the song. I think he does.
I'm wondering if he does. I think, you know, we're so aged out of the demo now that this generation that's coming up, they don't understand some of the music that we grew up with, that when we hear it, we're like, oh, yeah. And they're like, what is this? I've never heard this in my life. We'll also talk some fantasy football coming up next hour. Michael F. Florio from NFL Network stops by before we get to happy hour at 5 o'clock. Stay in the sports bar. Danger and Battaglia on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.